Grace and peace, family. Welcome to Zion in Power, your weekly wellspring, where tradition meets truth and the word comes alive. We're digging deep wells, drinking from ancient streams, and remembering that our faith did not start yesterday. Here at Empowerment Temple, we believe the same God who split the sea is still parting ways for us. Whether you're tuned in from a kitchen table, a quiet corner, or somewhere in the struggle, this moment is for you. So take a breath, open your heart, grab your scriptures, and let's step into this word together. This week, we travel through one of the most quietly radical portions of the Torah, Maasai, where every step Israel took is recorded with divine intention. On the surface, it's a travelogue, but underneath, it's a sacred autopsy of a people in transition. The salt knows the way. The wind speaks first, not in sentences, but salt. It moves across porches and tidal flats, naming things long buried beneath the dunes. And the tree leans like they're listening to something older than a memory, a conversation between land and sky that never needed a translator. We came here for gathering for kin, we know, and those we don't, to eat what the sea offered and watch children run where our elders once wept. But the land had plans, whispering scripture through rusted anchors and seaots bowed low like Levites in procession. No one said it, but everyone felt it. This is not just a reunion, it's a reckoning. Every laugh echoes with what we almost lost. Every breeze carries names and numbers. 42 stations of a people in transit. 42 memories we forgot, we inherited. Here where fairies drift like priestly processions, and time folds like linen between tides, we learn again you cannot enter a promise if you forget the wilderness. You must name the roads. Name the grief, name the mercy that carried you when your feet no longer could. Because the map beneath the map is not ink and borders, it's memory, wrapped in covenant, bound by justice, and swollen with mercy, that dares to include those we thought the inheritance had left out. So walk slowly, breathe deeply. Let the sea reteach you how to listen. For even now, God draws borders, not with fences, but with rivers that remember where we've been and where we must go. So some of the key questions we would ask here is, what if the places we pass through are still in us? What if memory has coordinates and holiness is hidden in the margins of the map? The part one, we want to draw our attention to Numbers 33, 1 through 49, memory as movement. Moses records every leg of the wilderness journey. Why? Not to romanticize it, but to teach. Trauma, miracles, failures, and daily routines are all preserved. The mundane becomes holy because it's remembered. There's no promised land without a remembered wilderness. In part two, Numbers 36, 1 through 13, it's the real inheritance test. The daughters of Zelophehad make their final appearance, and the question isn't about land. It's about legacy, agency, and boundaries that preserve identity without walling out justice. A hidden layer here is women carry the future by honoring the past. Then when we look at our New Testament reading coming from Matthew 23, 1 through 12 and 37 to 39, burdened by beauty, Yeshua walks the roads of Maasai, this week's parasha, in his own way, tracing the hypocrisy of leaders who polish tombs while ignoring justice. He laments the city that kills its prophets. The wilderness may have been harsh, but the city forgets. Underneath this we find the gravest danger isn't rebellion, but it's performance without presence. When we get to Numbers 34, and Ezekiel 47, borders as blessings or curse. They intertwine so eloquently. Both texts define land with astonishing detail, but with different goals. For Moses, it's order, justice, tribe. For Ezekiel, it's healing, abundance, and shared inheritance, even with the foreigner. Underneath this, we see God's justice preserves identity, but his mercy extends borders. When we look at this construct between Numbers and Ezekiel, let's have some fun as we dive through some of the older texts. In Genesis 18:19, we find that it says, "For I have known him, that he may command his children to keep the way of the Lord, to do righteousness and justice, charity and judgment." So this righteousness and justice is interchangeable. Justice is not abstract. It's identity forming. God's covenant with Abraham begins not with land, but with moral legacy. Justice passed down generationally. The Hebrew mishpat, or justice, preserves the boundaries of who we are. In Exodus 34:6-7, the Lord passed in front of Moses, calling out Yahweh, the Lord, the God of compassion and mercy. I am slow to anger and filled with unfailing love and forgiveness and faithfulness. I lavish unfailing love to 1,000 generations. I forgive iniquity, rebellion, and sin, but I do not excuse the guilty. I lay the sins of the parents upon their children and grandchildren. The entire family is affected, even the children of a third and fourth generation. Often this text is taken out of context. Here, the Almighty is putting an accountability. He's not making a curse, but the Lord shows his compassion and graciousness, but by no means is he clearing the guilt. He's saying there's still going to be consequences for your actions. 13 attributes of mercy do not nullify justice. Rather, they balance it. Mercy expands reach, but justice anchors memory. Mercy becomes permissiveness, but without mercy, justice becomes crushing. In Deuteronomy 32:4, he is a rock. His deeds are perfect. Everything he does is just and fair. He's a faithful God who does no wrong. This divine identity is defined by justice. Rashi teaches here that God's justice is not like man's justice. His justice is his faithfulness. Thus, to abandon justice is to actually blur the image of the just one. In Numbers 27:7, the claim of the daughters of Zephelet is legitimate. You must give them a grant of land along their father's relatives, assign them the property that would have been given to their father. Essentially, we find that the daughters of Zephelet are right. Justice is preserved in their father's name. Mercy redrew the borders of inheritance law. In a hidden midrashic moment, God listens and law is modified without violating identity. Mercy expands inclusion while reinforcing covenant structure. Enlarge your house, build an addition, spread out your home and spare no expense, Isaiah says in chapter 54. A prophetic vision. Mercy expands territory, but the tent must be strengthened at the stakes. Identity rooted in justice becomes the firm stake from which mercy can stretch outward without tearing. Mercy and truth have met together. Righteousness and peace have kissed. The sages say this verse describes the heavenly deliberation at creation. Shall man be created? Justice said, no. Mercy said, yes. The Almighty braided them together. True identity survives not through exclusion, but integration. Prophet Micah says, know, O people, the Lord has told you what is good. And this is what he requires of you, to do what is right, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. Justice and mercy are not in tension. They are companions. Justice defines you. Mercy defines the width. Identity is preserved. Borders are extended only when humility yokes them both. So, loving kindness or chesed makes the way where identity or justice alone would stop. The insight here is, with justice, the world stands firm. With mercy, the world is healed. Justice holds a pattern, the blueprint of creation, but mercy heals the broken image of that pattern in us. Identity without expansion is isolation. Expansion without identity is dissolution. But when justice guards the name and mercy enlarges the reach, then Zion can both remember who she is and welcomed the nations. In 2 Corinthians 6:14 through 18, the temple that travels, Paul, echoing Torah, insists we are now the temple. The cities of refuge become spiritual metaphors. The priesthood becomes incarnate. Holiness is portable, but the cost is radical separation from corruption. We look at Psalms 23 and 63. It's a fun exercise to see how they intertwine. David writes from the wilderness. One psalm declares the earth is the Lord's, and the other that the soul thirsts in a dry and weary land. It's the lamentation meeting the ascension. So one could read from the 24th Psalm, the earth is the Lord and everything in it. The world and all its people belong to him. And you correlate that with, oh God, you are my God. I earnestly search for you. My soul thirsts for you. My whole body longs for you in this parched and weary land where there's no water. Sometimes worship is remembering what you didn't see yet. When we get to our word studies for the week, is nachala inheritance or possession? The meaning is an assigned portion of land, but also metaphorically a legacy or divine share. The gematria means is the value is 93. It's used throughout Numbers 34 through 6 regarding the land portions of the daughters of Zelophehad. The insight here is, why is it that the daughters merited what even the men feared to ask? Because they loved the land and trusted the promise. Inheritance, or nachala, is not just what you've been handed. It's what you dare to believe you were born to carry. And sometimes, the women who had no voice in the wilderness become the ones who protect the integrity of promise. The other word we have is the givul, or boundary, or border, or territory, or limit. The gematria is 41. It's used in Numbers 34 and Ezekiel 47, where the tribal boundaries and spiritual borders are laid out in divine precision. The insight here is, just as the sea stops at the shore, so must a person know their givul. They must know their boundary, lest the waters overrun their mission. We live in a world that either idolizes boundaries or rejects them. But the scriptures call for sacred boundaries. Not to restrict, but to sanctify. Boundaries protect the holy from being trampled and remind us where mercy flows. We often crave arrival, but this portion teaches us inheritance is not just about what you end up or where you end up, but what you're willing to carry forward and what you're commanded to leave behind. Some questions here is, are there people, practices, or assumptions God is calling you to drive out before you cross your Jordan? Are your borders keeping others out or keeping you safe from what's to come? The wilderness, we must remember. There's no promised land without a remembered wilderness. This isn't a metaphor for sentimentality. It's spiritual law. If you forget the road that broke you open, you will mishandle the gift that heals you. The wilderness is not just geography, it's curriculum. The silence, the scarcity, the thirst, the serpents. These are not just episodes to escape. They are lessons etched into the soul. Because you don't inherit holiness, you grow into it through hunger, obedience, and memory. Our generation wants arrival without process, victory without cost, elevation without excavation. But the land God gives comes with instruction. Drive out what does not belong. Demolish what cannot remain. Take possession of what you did not earn, but must now steward. The moment we cross into blessing without remembering bondage, we become consumers of grace instead of carriers of it. That's why Moses kept a record. That's why Jesus wept over Jerusalem. That's why Paul endured hardship and never forgot the road to Damascus. Because true leaders don't chart futures. They remember past. They bring maps of mercy and scars of survival. Just as we stand on the edge of our own inheritance, whatever that may be, let us not rush past the journey. Let us name the places. Let us honor the steps. because the God who led us out still walks with us in, and he does not waste a wilderness. Integration. Inheritance is not static, it's dynamic, requiring memory, ritual, justice, and faith. Like the wilderness journey recorded in Numbers 33, your Nahala is shaped by the places you've walked through, the boundaries you've respected, and the idols you've torn down. As we move through Massey, we realize the journey was never just to reach land. It was to prepare the people to carry legacy, Nahala. Nahala flows through those who remember the wilderness, not with resentment, but with reverence. Because only such people can be trusted with the river that flows from the sanctuary in Ezekiel's vision. So whether you're standing before land to divide or prophecy to declare, remember, inheritance is not what you get. It's what God entrusts to those who've made room within themselves to receive it. As we draw this episode to a close, I want to thank you for walking with us step by step through these stories, scriptures, and reflections. If today's message stirred something in you, if it reminded you of the deeper wells we still have to dig or bridges still to build, then I invite you to become a part of what's next. Zion Empowered isn't just a podcast. It's a movement, a mission, a ministry. And like any sacred journey, it moves forward on faith and the faithful. If this work blesses you, teaches you, or helps you feel seen, consider sowing a seed. Your giving helps us reach farther, go deeper, and keep lifting up voices that need to be heard. You can support us by visiting zionempowered.com or by clicking on the link in the show notes. No amount is too small, because even a mustard seed moves mountains. Until next time, may your path be clear, your purpose unshaken, and your spirit in power, grace, and peace from Zion.